This is the Student Voice Podcast. Welcome to TSV.
All right, guys, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to our first podcast.
We are the 9 hosts of the Student Voice Podcast. My name is Monsi. My pronouns are she, her. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. I'm 16 years old, and my zodiac sign is Taurus. And my little fun fact that's kind of embarrassing is I used to be a hardcore Harry Potter fan to the extent that I had Weasley in my Instagram username. And now I'm going to pass it to Akil, who's a recovered Shawn Mendes super fan, but I think he still secretly likes his songs.
I mean, I can't deny that I love myself some Shawn Mendes, but I'm a little cooler than I was a couple years ago. Hey, y'all. I'm Akil. I'm an 18-year-old from Florida. I am a proud Aries, and I'm going to pass it over to my fellow fire sign, Adrian, who thinks that chess is a sport. No skepticism.
All I'm going to say is that you burn calories in chess, so just putting it out there. But hey, everyone. I'm Adrian. I'm a 17-year-old Floridian Sagittarius, which I get a few ills from that, but I'll take it. And I go by he, him. And now I'll pass it on to Sophia, who vomited on John Stamos. You want to elaborate a little bit on that, Sophia?
And I am proud of it. My name is Sophia. My pronouns are she, her. I'm from Miami, Florida. I'm 17, and I am also an Aries. And I'm going to pass it on to Laura, who belly flopped at her first swim meet race.
Thanks, Sophia. And don't think you got away from that story about Joe Stamos. I know everybody's going to want to hear that. Hi, guys. My name is Laura. I am 18 years old from Arizona. My pronouns are she, her. And I'm a Virgo. Up next, just to keep the fun facts rolling, I'll introduce Anissa, who used to have a Shawn Mendes fan account.
Yes, sadly, the evidence is still on the internet. But anyways, I'm Anissa. My pronouns are she, her. I'm from Arizona. I'm 17 years old, and I'm a Leo. I'm going to pass it on to Natasha, who had a mermaid and Taylor Swift face at the same time.
Okay, hi. Can you blame me, though? I just feel like listening to Fearless as you're, like, swimming in your pool pretending to be a mermaid, like, that's just a vibe. It's just a vibe. Anyway, so my name is Natasha. My pronouns are she, her. I'm from Arizona, unfortunately. and I'm 17, and I am a Cancer, the superior zodiac sign. And I'm going to pass it on to Freshie, who up until a few months ago thought that Oregon was in the middle of the U.S.
In my defense, I do come from the Midwest, and I don't really see much besides corn usually, so even maps were a little bit new to me whenever I was growing up. So hey guys, I'm Freshie. That is a nickname, and I might get into a little bit later, but I go by she, her pronouns, and I am from southwestern Indiana. I'm 17 years old, and my zodiac sign is an Aries. I'm going to pass it off to Gabby, though, who couldn't really think of anything for a fun fact, but she has hashtag no regrets.
Yeah, that's on period. I regret nothing. Okay. My name is Gabby. I am from Florida. I am 17 years old. I go by the pronouns she, her, and I am a Gemini, the most underrated sign, period.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for those introductions. So now I want to get into a little bit how we met and how this podcast got started. So we are a group of young people who are really passionate about advocacy and about making change in our worlds. So specifically, we all met virtually working for a nonpartisan voter registration organization. And we met people all around the country who are just really passionate about, like I said, just making change in this world. So, you know, for me, why I got into this work is, first of all, I am a woman of color in this world. I am part of the LGBTQ community, and I am also Jewish. So I have seen a little bit of, you know, the nature of being a minority in this country. And I think it's really important to give a voice to minorities, to give a voice to the people who have been silenced so much throughout history. So that's something that's really important to me personally. In addition, I also did some research on voter habits, and it just made me realize how many people are disenfranchised in this country. And it gave me both the knowledge and the passion that I needed to just go and really make change by taking a hands-on approach. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it on to Laura. Do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, similar to you, I'm also part of a few minorities. So I'm Latina as well. I'm also a lesbian. So like just from that perspective, it gives a person a different point of view. And just the involvement in these societies that you have just opens your eyes a bit more to some things that other people may not be able to experience. So just seeing how our communities or themselves are impacted just drives me to say, like, to just gives me a purpose to join this kind of work. And definitely the quarantine was, I needed something to do over quarantine as well. I know that it was a perfect time to get involved, and I couldn't be happier about my decision to join. What about you, Natasha?
Okay, third queer person in a row, let's go. I'm also a lesbian, and for me, I mainly kind of got involved with activism in general through that, and so I think a lot of it was kind of just in general. I feel like when you're a teenager and when you're in high school and then, you know, you're part of a marginalized group, it's like just these intense feelings of like having no control. And I think that kind of activist work is a way to, I think it's interesting because it's almost a way to cope while lifting up other people who are like you. And I think that's really what drove me. I mean, it's a little self-centered if you think about it, but that quote that's like, be the person that you needed when you were younger, I feel like that's the kind of thing that really drove me to get involved with this work. And with voting specifically, I just think that it's so important for all of us to have a say and all of us to support democracy and all being involved in our country.
Yeah, Natasha, I totally agree. And like, for me, I didn't have a specific event or anything that kind of set my work as an activist in motion, but I am also part of a minority. I'm a woman of color. And I don't know, growing up as a teenager, especially like during this past couple years or so, it's definitely been a really turbulent time in the US. And we're at the age where we're smart enough to know what's going on, but not old enough to participate in the way that we want to. And it definitely was super frustrating to sit here and be like, I want to make a change, but I don't have that voice yet. I'm not of age to make the change that I want to see happen. So helping other people get their voices and make change in this country was definitely like super life-changing, because since I wasn't able to do it myself, like helping other people do the things that I wanted to do and use their voice in to improve the state of the country that we live in was definitely an amazing experience.
Yeah, Monty, I second that. And Keel speaking, just so the audience knows. Yeah, for me, as important as it is for me as a Black man to represent myself and my family, my community well, for me, the biggest thing was just seeing how other people were transformed by conversations I had about topics that were just overlooked. And like, I've noticed it in like voter registration drives at school, but especially during quarantine when everyone was like spaced out and like depressed and sad and overwhelmed. And then seeing that like there was a group of young people that were like, hey, I want to do something active. And then that community really made me feel like, one, I'm not alone. Two, I don't need to feel like I'm hopeless. And three, there's always community. So for me, it was really the community aspect that spoke out to me. And it's the main driver for me as I, you know, continue that advocacy stuff.
Yeah, most definitely, Akil. I definitely agree with that. And another thing that got me really into advocacy and as deep as I am in it now is when quarantine first started and the Black Lives Matter movement skyrocketed as far as its progression in America. And that really, really inspired me, because after the death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and many others along that time, I felt so, like, the word I always like describe it is like, honestly, hopeless. That's the word that best describes how I felt. And I felt like I was in a movie. I remember I would talk to my mom one night and I was like, Mom, I don't feel like tomorrow is going to exist, because I really felt like everything was stacked up against me and my family. And although those things was not a direct impact on me personally, as far as like my physical safety, but my mental, emotional health was not at its best because of what was going on, and knowing that that could happen to my brother or anybody in my family. And that really motivated me to be like, yeah, Gabby, you got what it takes to do something. You just have to find what you can do to contribute to the movement. And the organization that all of us met through definitely helped me through that, and to find myself in knowing what can I do, at one, being a minor, and then two, with the resources that I have now, what can I do to contribute to a bigger cause.
In the most affluent nation in the world, we still have a ton of people getting the short end of the stick. But it doesn't always have to be that way. Progress has happened. We've passed Social Security. We passed the Civil Rights Act. We passed Medicare. And I just want to do my part in continuing to spin the wheels of progress to hopefully make the short end of the stick not as bad as it once used to be.
Similar to what Gabby said about feeling hopeless, I know what that feels like as a Black woman, to be underrepresented and to feel differently. So I want to take back my control by getting involved in activism and actively working towards a better future for myself and others.
Hey guys, Freshie here. I would say what's really brought me to advocacy, and it's really weird because I never even considered myself being somebody that could be kind of like either a trailblazer or that person that like stands up in the middle of the room and is like not afraid to say whatever is on their mind. But I grew up in a household that, and also just an area in living in Indiana where you weren't really supposed to raise your voice if you had a different opinion than the majority. And specifically, if you were a woman in that area, you definitely didn't have a way to raise your voice. And I joined a program called Youth in Government. Shout out to all my YAG and YIG friends out there. And this program really showed me what it's like to have a voice, and that no matter what your opinion is, it still matters. And you can have a differing opinion than somebody that's across the room, but that doesn't mean you can't be respectful with each other, and you can't still have the same drive and the same mission that leads you guys to service, leadership, and all the wonderful things that we need in the world. So the reason that I'm always out here doing advocacy work and all that is because I just want to make sure that everybody's voice can be heard, because I'm tired of seeing people getting silenced just because of their age, their race, their color. How do I find the words for this? I'm gonna just stop it there, running out of things. But yeah, doesn't matter who you are, you're still allowed to have a voice, and I fight for people like that. But yeah, I'm gonna hand it over to Anissa to just continue on our conversation.
Okay, so as you've heard, like, we're all very interested, and civic engagement activism is very important to us. So we thought it'd be cool if we came together and just created a space to educate others and to give a voice to those unheard. We want this podcast to serve as another medium of communication to spread awareness and information about issues we face in our country. I'm going to pass it on to Natasha.
Yeah, so we want this to be a source of information, but also we want this to be a really positive space if we can make it one. Obviously, the issues we're going to be talking about aren't happy things, but we want this to be uplifting and empowering and really discuss long-term solutions and our personal opinions rather than just the issues and a lot of the intense negativity that we have to deal with all the time. So we really want this to be empowering to young people and young activists. And I'm going to pass it on to Akil.
Word to that. All right. So let me tell y'all a quick breakdown of how we're structuring the podcast so that you have an idea of how we're moving forward, you know, for our future episodes. So to bring you the TSV podcast, we've got four different groups of hosts who, after this episode, are going to be rotating every few weeks for each of our episodes. And for the time being, we're going to release two episodes a month, but, you know, we're definitely open to producing more as time goes on. We're just trying to find our footing for the time being. And of course, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you listen to your podcast.
Now let's break down the structure of an episode. So Each episode is going to be about preferably two hosts per episode with maybe one notable guest. And each episode is going to look like an intro, we discuss a topic, and then we give resources, and we end with a bit of poetry.
Thanks, Adrian. So you might be wondering how we got to where we got, right? And just basically just where the name of the podcast came from. For example, like the Student Voice, it's a pretty broad name, and it's like, are we really willing to take on that job to really be your guys' voices and talk to you guys and just like be your source of information? And discussions. And I just wanted to introduce just a little bit of the history behind the name. Originally, the name came from a newspaper started by SNCC, or the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, back in the 1960s. This organization got to work alongside MLK and his movement, and the movement that he led, as well as other political activists, up until 1965. And just, there's a lot more history behind there. If you guys want to go find the first issue of the first volume, it's online. I found a PDF. It was pretty easy to find, so hopefully you guys can find it too. But just because, we're hoping this episode gets released on MLK Day, Monsi and Gabby next are going to start talking about, the similarities between the newspaper in the 60s, the movement in the 60s, as well as the movement today and what we hope to achieve.
Yes, so SNCC and MLK definitely had a lot of common values. One being they both emphasized the importance of nonviolence while protesting for justice.
Yeah, so SNCC mainly covered student nonviolent protests during the civil rights movement in the 60s. And as most of us should know, MLK was a leader of the civil rights movement. So they definitely had a lot of common values and experienced similar events during that time.
Also, fun fact, the SNCC newspaper was published in Atlanta, Georgia, which is where MLK is from. So they both witnessed the same issues firsthand. And I actually want to have a question for you guys. So how has MLK impacted you? What do you know about him that inspires you or that you look up to or anything like that?
Okay, so I actually want to jump in on this because one of the things I admire most about him is just his skill as an orator. Like, my dad has a bunch of like recordings of him, and like he's done a bunch of presentations when he was working at the local university he used to work at. And he just like, he has just all these this files, and like I'd watch them as a kid, and like I even watch a lot of MLK speeches now and his writing, and he's just so skilled. And like, you know, of course, like the context in which he was operating allowed those skills to thrive really well. But I think just independent of the context, his skill to just weave these really big ideas and the suffering of Black people and other minorities at the time into a digestible form, and he was just, his charisma, for me, that's what inspires me a lot. I love his skill and the way he was able to bring everything together so well.
Totally, Akil. I completely agree with you. And to kind of go off on that, I just really admire the unifying language that he used. Like, he never sought to create divisions in society because he knew that could only create more harm than good. And I just think that's something that we as activists and as people who want to see change in this world can really learn from. It doesn't do anyone any good to create additional divisions, but it really helps us to, you know, address each other as one society, because that's what we are. And I really admire Dr. King for that. And I hope that we can embody that ideal in our future.
Yeah, Sophie, I totally agree. He just has a way with words that makes you want to work together and help those around you. And it's so inspiring. But one of the things that I took to heart from MLK, honestly, is I firmly believe that the second you use violence while trying to make a point, your entire argument is just lost. Like, the second you try to hurt another person, instead of arguing against their beliefs or their argument, you have no ground to stand on anymore. So his way of making all this change and leading all this change without getting violent in any sense is honestly so inspiring to me. And I use that in, like, every single thing I do every single day. And that's the thing that I've taken most from him as a leader.
Can we talk about resonance, though? Like, when I think about MLK, his voice rings in my ear, but like in the most beautiful way possible. It's just so, it's like mesmerizing and really memorable. Because not only was his words so eloquently spoken, it was just, he sound like, I feel like tone is very important. Tone is in like, sound is really important, and that's like a human sense that really resonates with us. So I definitely have to mention that because he just sounds like his voice so right. Reverend Skills going crazy. He sounds so amazing.
For me, MLK really definitely inspires me because of his resilience. No matter how many times this man was beaten, arrested, assaulted, he persevered, and I have it so much easier compared to him. So it would make no sense for me to like just stand around and do nothing, because this man went through a lot and he still persevered and continued.
I agree with everyone. MLK's orator skills are just beautiful. He is just godlike when he speaks. He's so clever and efficient and focused, and he had his mind set on something and he just achieved it, and every single word contributed towards achieving that goal. Honestly, one of my most just inspiring speakers. I love him.
Another thing that MLK was really like spoke a lot on and was really inspiring about was how like urgent issues that are occurring at that time are and how quickly you have to start acting on them. Like, you're not going to help at all if you're just like, oh, I can do this another time, or I'm not going to do anything about it if you're just sitting around. And so he definitely emphasized the importance of taking that sense of urgency and applying it to the work you're doing, and not just lazing around and being like, okay, it doesn't affect me, or whatever I do isn't going to have an impact and things like that. Like, that's not going to make any change happen. So the way he emphasized like starting immediately and doing work as quick as you can and not just being lazy about it was definitely really important.
Definitely. Just like something that you pointed out there is just how active he was and how determined he was. I actually talked to one of my English teacher in my high school, and he actually got to work with Dr. King. He attended his funeral when Dr. King passed. And I asked him before we recorded this, like, what do you most remember about him, or what was his, like, most impactful to you? And he said just how Dr. King never saw an issue or problem that people were facing as less than any other just because of their size of, or how many people were affected. Every issue mattered to him, and the way he acted on those problems and issues was direct and effective, and with no, what's the word? Just like he was very direct, and he just was very attentive to people's issues, and he realized that no problem was too small. And that no minority deserved less attention just because they were smaller. So I feel like that's also transitioned into today, just how we've been able to highlight all of these different communities. So I feel like, I don't know, it's just like mentioning everything that he's done for all of these types of communities and advocacy and activism work is amazing.
Give me a second. That milk comment got me tripped up a little bit.
Yeah.
So with all that being said, do you guys think that the movement today, the progress we are trying to achieve, isn't working out as concretely as we want it to compared to the civil rights movement? Because we don't have that centralized, just absolutely clever order of a leader to just stand at the helm and glue us all together while we try to build the future we're looking for.
Adrian, that's such a wonderful question. I think that's a very important question to ask as well, because that was something that ran across my mind too, because in the 60s, they had MLK, Malcolm X, plenty of other people that were on top as far as, leading the movement. And now we have a lot of people with the fire and drive to do what needs to be done to make change, but there's not a cap on it for like direct and clear goals, because we have so many people that comes with a lot of different opinions and ideologies. And it's like, I feel like for me personally, I feel like there needs to be a head order, whether it's singular or group, like just a head order to steer us in the right direction. So, but we are going in a direction, and progress is progress, no matter how small or big. So that's a big question. That's a loaded question.
Yeah, Gabby, I feel the exact same way. And it's interesting that you asked this, Adrian, because at Georgetown, one of the classes I'm taking is called Blackness as an Organizing Strategy. And basically the thesis of the class is comparing the civil rights movement to contemporary social movements. And last week, the week before Thanksgiving, we were talking about how Black Lives Matter compared to the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s. And I don't think, initially I had the same thought as Gabby that in this day and age, we could probably use a centralizing figure like Dr. King. But when I went deeper into how different the social context that we're growing up in, I realized that it's probably a better thing that we're decentralized. Because when you look at Black Lives Matter, the reason why it's been able to thrive and be in the active consciousness of our nation is because of mainly social media. And because we have social media, there's this democratization of active advocacy and this democratization of people who can get their hands on things. In the 50s and 60s, you know, leaders like Dr. King were emerging from churches. And now the role of the Black church has changed. You know, there's more people with more power. So as beautiful as an idea would be to have, you know, a 2020s Dr. King, I think we benefit from the increased access that things like social media allow us to have. Because for all we know, we could be the next series of generational change makers, and we don't necessarily need that type of centralizing figure. And the last thing I'd say before I hop off my high horse, I'm sorry, is to remember that as much as our history books tell us that Dr. King was an amazing centralizing figure, which he was, we forget that he was an extremely controversial figure in his time. In his time, he wasn't revered as this amazing person by everybody. At the time, he was extremely controversial. He was arrested dozens of times for a reason. You know, he was assassinated for a reason. That was because people, even in our American government, didn't agree with his message. So, I think we need to do service to the fact that he was also going up against extreme division. And the unity that we see now is a product of, historical narrative. But yeah.
Akil, thank you so much. And I don't know how I'm going to compare to what you just said. And I agree with a lot of what you just said, especially the fact that social media has been so transformative to this movement in comparison to the civil rights movement. So what I think the impact of social media has been is just that social media itself is the centralizing figure, in a sense, of the movement. We, all of us around the country, are brought together by social media, by following the same accounts, by seeing what's going on throughout the nation. And in that sense, I think that it's really important to give a voice to those regional leaders. I know I went to a protest here in Florida, and it was really inspiring to see just some local people who aren't big in government, who don't have big names, just show their passion for the movement and to just really show their passion for the movement and go ahead and rouse everyone. And I personally just found it very inspiring. And I think that seeing the rise of those regional leaders can be really important for the future.
I definitely agree with your point there, Sophia, that social media and just the internet has changed everything. I believe that just the way that just information gets around today. I know that back in the 60s, they needed a leader and they needed central figures to be able to showcase them on newspapers to make the movement seem organized. But today, it's just the way social media works and the way communications works today is just, it's so much faster, it's so much broader, so much more international that it doesn't require a single figure to be able to communicate the movement or the purpose of a movement. I feel like just the way we are able to show each other information, show each other videos, pictures, comments, paragraphs, whatever it is, it just has changed the movement completely and for the better. I mean, information now is really available for everybody, as long as you have technology available to you. And it's just, it has made the movement a whole lot more inclusive, I think. And it has allowed for all of types of voices to be able to rise and pitch in and just make the movement, and I don't want to say better, but just more expansive. So just to go off of your question, Adrian, I don't know if we're going to be able to measure the progress the same way as we did back in the 60s, but it's definitely progress that has been made. So I don't think I don't think you can really compare the two.
Yeah, Laura, I totally agree. But to take a different side to that, I think back in the 60s, it was not to say that it's not obvious now, but instances against people of color were far more blatant and exposed. And like, it was so obvious, the division that was taking place. But now in an age of social media, it's really easy for people to hide behind a screen and block progress, but still keep up this attitude of being better and like overstepping barriers to racism, but behind the scenes they're not really doing that. And I think that's one of the major things that blocks the movement now, because it's so easy to just like troll someone on social media or be sharing wrong information or things like that. It's like when in the 60s you could see visibly what was happening, but now it's much more difficult because everything's kind of hidden. Like, there's this undertone of things not being really fixed under this attitude of pretending that there's been progress. And of course there's been progress, but there are people that still try to stop that, and they can do that super easily at a time where it's so easy to be someone else over the internet and share different opinions and influence how other people think. So there's definitely pros and cons to social media and how it helps a movement, but that's the other side of the coin.
Yeah, adding on to Monsi and Laura, I think it's so interesting how social media has shifted this. And even because I think it's debatable whether or not certain current movements need a leader, but beyond that, there are people specifically advocating that we shouldn't have one. And I wasn't really aware of that until I was scrolling through Instagram about a month ago, and I saw a post like strongly advocating against like the role of quote unquote organizer. And I mean, I don't know whether to the extent that I agree with that, but essentially what they meant was like organizer as in kind of the leader of a movement, and talking more about people lead a movement together. And so I feel like that's really interesting, as now we're seeing this kind of new idea of people. I mean, I'm sure it's not new, but people being definitively against having one specific leader. And so I think activism has become a lot more accessible, you know, even with the movement that we got involved with voter registration. I mean, I found out about it through social media, because you can just click a Zoom link and you're there. So I think that can also really lead to performative activism so easily, because if you're not following through with what you post on your Instagram story, then you're not really advocating for what you say that you do. So
To move on from that point that you made there, Natasha, about performative activism, like today it can be really easy to get caught up in like the fervor of a movement and then just not follow up on those actions that you take initially. What do you think, Akhil?
Yeah, I agree. I think that kind of leads into the double-edged sword of social media, because we have such instant access to what's happening and so many issues. It becomes easy to not have a very deep attachment. You know, there's a lot of broad attention, but not deep attachment to our actions. So definitely a discussion that I'm looking forward to seeing like in future episodes, probably one of them coming up really soon. But yeah, performative activism is spicy, to say the least.
Yeah, so guys, usually around this portion of the episode, we'd be giving you guys tons of resources, a lot of contacts, organizations, or possibly even social media accounts to look up, because we want to make sure that we're not only here just talking to you guys and being a part of your wonderful days, but we also want to be that link between information and action. So we want to just make sure that you understand that just because we're young, just because we're a part of the queer community, just because we are part of another race community, that doesn't mean that we can't act on whatever we set our hearts to. So all of our the end of our episodes that we'll be giving you guys is tons of action steps and tons of ways to get involved.
Guys, we just finished our first ever Student Voice podcast. So I hope you guys enjoyed this. I hope you guys really like learned something and you actually want to see the next episode because there will be more to come.
Yeah, and totally. And maybe on the next episode, we might be talking to a special guest whose name you might recognize. And you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at TSVPod.
We're all so excited to get started on this because we're all so passionate about this work. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope that you enjoyed.
Bye, y'all.
Okay, we're going to do it all three.
We're
going to
do it all three. Ready?
Do not scream. Just like normal.
Yeah. Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.
One more time.
Kind of sounds so tired.
Hi.
3.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
3, 2, 1.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.